Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears, we will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Apostle. And today I have Andrea Westbrook with me. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Sophia.
It's so good to finally be able to do this because we've been trying for months and I'm thrilled. Well, and one of the reasons we've been trying for months is that you live in Australia. So time zones are a real thing.
They are a real thing. So for anyone listening, we're recording it at 7:05 a.m. in my time.
I mean, yeah, you took the bullet this time for sure. Because for me, it's 5 p.m., which is like very reasonable. 7 a.m., I think, is a little unreasonable. And I'm really grateful that you're here. Did you get coffee?
I've had a coffee. I'm ready to go. I'm really lucky that I live in Queensland, which is sunny most of the time. So we're usually awake with the sunrise pretty early. So
Well, and here in North America, we're transitioning to winter, which means you're transitioning into spring.
That's correct. Yes.
Oh, that's nice. So the sun is like up earlier.
Yeah, it's starting to rise earlier. So. And we have two dogs that always wake us up anyway. So,
do they?
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, that's very sweet. Well, Andrea, I've known about you and followed you for quite some time. I think years now since you kind of came on the scene.
Yeah, a little while.
Right? Because we kind of do similar stuff. And this is why it was so exciting to follow you and see how you developed your business. And you've kind of taken your business in a bit of a different direction from what I do. And I'm very excited for you to talk about that. So let's just dive in. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, awesome. So I'm Andrea Westbrook, and I am a size inclusion specialist and a life coach. And I really focus on working with fat, plus size women or curvy women, anyone really who identifies as having a larger body. And I moved into this space. I have a background in HR. I've got 20 years experience in HR, and I felt the call for a change, and I loved helping people achieve their goals. And so when I was searching and working out what I was going to do next, I discovered life coaching through podcasts, actually. And I was listening to podcasts thinking, this is what I could do. And as I was working, I did my life coaching course and learned how to structure a coaching program and that sort of thing. And you get to the point of the course where you're working out who are you going to work with. And I was going in a direction that didn't really excite me at all, and it felt flat. But part of the course introduces us to the concept of social justice and how people from marginalized groups, their mindset is different from people from privileged groups. And it really got me thinking, this is so interesting. And as a fat person, I had never really, and I have to acknowledge my privilege as a white, educated, heterosexual woman, but I'm also fat, and I'd never really thought of myself as being part of a marginalized group until we started diving into this section of the course. And an article was shared with me around body size and how it is the area of diversity and inclusion that is not talked about. And when I read this article, it was like an explosion went off in my heart. It was a real transformation for me, because that's when I knew who I had to work with. And I knew that I had to work with other fat women to help us all, because I'm still on this journey too, to break, not to break down the systemic biases, because that's, we can't do that alone, but to navigate them and work and understand that it's not you. There are systemic biases that shape how you see yourself in the world. And so I was working with clients and loving that. And then it was another light bulb moment. And I realized this is only part of the story. We can only get so far. The system needs to meet us halfway. And when I say the system, I mean society, the patriarchy, the world. It needs to meet us halfway. And I thought, well, how am I going to do this? How am I, as an individual, going to show the system what needs to happen? And that's when I thought, well, this is my bread and butter. This is my HR background. This is what I've done for 20 years, is help employers understand how they can be more engaging and develop environments and cultures where all people feel like they belong. And that's where the size inclusion specialist side of things came in. And now I work with employers to create more size inclusive, size friendly cultures, workplaces, environments for their employees.
Oh, Andrea, oh my goodness. I'm so in awe that your coaching program brought that forward. That's quite progressive. I did my coaching now. It's over about 10 years ago. And it wasn't talked about. Which I don't blame the coaching school for. It has changed. They do now talk about people of marginalized identities and privilege and power and the power that you hold as a coach. But like, wow, that's so impressive that part of the program blew that wide open for you, especially when you're like, oh, hang on, that's me. That moment of like that mirror moment.
Yeah, it was absolutely a mirror moment. And the reason I chose that particular coaching school, and I'll give them a plug because I do think they're awesome, the Beautiful You Coaching Academy. When I looked at their marketing material, it's initial glance, it wasn't me, because it's very feminine and girly and florally, not your traditional coaching academy marketing and sort of branding. But what I love is they, in their imagery and their photograph of students, and I know they use real students and real alumni, is that I saw fat people. I saw people of colour. I saw people that live with a disability. Like, I saw myself reflected in their branding. So even before I knew that was part of the course content, I knew that I was going to be accepted there, and that I was going to feel safe to bring my whole self there.
Okay, well, now I'm double shocked.
Yeah.
Have I ever seen that done? No. Like, that's kind of amazing. And I've looked at a lot of coaching websites. I work for a number of coaching companies, very familiar with their marketing. They're starting to show marginalized identities like BIPOC, like people of color, different skin tones, but I have not seen any fat people.
Yeah, no, you don't very often. And this was about 4 or 5 years ago that I first came across them. Yeah, so very progressive. Yeah.
That's amazing to me. Wow. I'm totally going to link to them, because that deserves a big shout out, because that means a lot. The fact that you could see yourself in their marketing materials.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I'm quite discerning now when I'm looking where I'm going to spend my money, and I want to see myself reflected. So for me, that was really important. And I put that lens on everything now, especially where I'm going to spend a considerable amount of money. I want to know that you've thought about me and my friends and the people I love, and that we are, well, at least you've thought about us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I said we're always going to be safe spending our money with that organization, but at least you're starting to think about it.
Yeah, it's so true. I have a lot of conversations now. Like, I just did a group coaching certification program, and the marketing, there was no people. It was just like the brand, like just the name. But I said, you know, before I commit to this, I really do need to have a conversation with you about how you handle, like, is there an anti-oppressive context that you're working within? I want to understand all these different things. And I do. I have those conversations with the people who are, you know, in charge, because you're right. If I'm going to spend, I mean, and these programs are not cheap. If I'm going to spend $2,000, let's say, on something, I want to know that I'm supporting people who are being thoughtful about systemic oppression and helping, like, bring it more in light, more to others as well, like with a very conscious choice.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, absolutely, I agree. I want to support people who are thinking along those lines too. But I love that you're raising that conversation, because to some organizations just haven't considered it. And it's not that that's deliberate. It's just hasn't been on their radar. But I think that is changing.
Well, and I'll tell you what's so interesting, because this is where we're going to kind of little sneak preview about where we're going to go today. So this coaching program was wonderful. I had a conversation with the owner, who was also the person who would be teaching us. I talked about anti-fatness and, you know, I talked about what was important to me, everything like that. And then when you're doing group coaching training, as the coach is doing the training, this is what coaching is so cool, where you in order to practice it, you have to receive it, right? It's not one of these things that is just done. And so we as a group of coaches who were in training to learn how to be group coaches needed a topic, and he proposed the topic of wellness. And I was like, hold up. I had to call it in front of everybody. I said, okay, well, I've just paid $2,000. This is worth my emotional labor. I said, the topic of wellness is fine. However, if there are conversations about intentional weight loss, exercise for weight loss, food choices, the diet culture aspects of wellness, i.e. conforming our bodies to some kind of idealized standard, then no, I cannot do this topic. And oh, the reactions that I got from the other people were pretty shocking.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't get it. They didn't like it. Most of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a few of them in particular.
And all straight sides people?
They were. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think
I'm shocked, but not surprised.
Right. And it was very interesting kind of being in a professional environment where I had to speak out, kind of be a bit of the odd person out. And we had to choose a different topic. And yeah, it wasn't great. There was this running theme that I felt throughout the whole time. But I was like, I did not pay $2,000 to get barraged by people's diet stories and exercise journals. Like, I will not.
Yeah.
But how this ties in is you and I are going to talk about kind of the DEI type work in organizations. And this is, you know, my experience was like along those lines. You know, he is a business owner who create spaces for others should hire you to learn a little more. But before we go into that, I want to talk about, and you've already started sharing a little bit about this, but your relationship to the word fat. Like, you said you had this aha moment when you saw this article, when you were in the coaching program. But what about before that, like growing up? How were you in your body? Did you use that word? Were you called that word?
I was definitely called that word, and I avoided that word like the plague. And I think for me, going back to my relationship with my body, I probably first became aware that I was fatter than other children because I was a child. Probably, I don't know, I can't remember the exact age, but it was probably around 8 or 9. And I remember going on my first diet when I was about 10 or 11. Yeah, because I remember sitting, we were going through the personal development classes at school. So that, I think that's when you kind of, and your body's starting to change and you start talking about boys and that sort of thing. And you start to become more conscious, girls start to become more conscious of our bodies. And I remember sitting on the monkey bars at school and, you know, and those conversations and going on a pretty extreme diet at that age and then being celebrated for that. Yeah. And then from there, for me, and I think for most fat women, being called fat is, well, for most women, being called fat is the worst possible thing that you can be called. It is so hurt. What? Traditionally has been so hurtful and damaging, and it really is used to put you in your place and to remind you that you don't belong here, you don't have a voice here, and you don't deserve to be seen here. So I had a very sad and damaged relationship with the word fat. Even well into adulthood, I'm going to say even till I decided that this was what I was going to do as a coach, I was like, holy crap, how am I going to address this audience? What am I going to call them? Nobody likes the word fat. I hate it. It just, you know, it makes me feel so awful and hurt. What am I going to do? So I chatted with a friend who works in marketing. She goes, why don't you just do a survey of your audience and see what they want to be called? And I couldn't get a definitive answer. Like, I did a survey, asked her opinions, and everyone liked different things. And I was like, oh, so this, which is true, like everyone identifies with a different word, especially when it comes to body size. Some people that don't even like plus size, to admit that your plus size is a big thing. So I was like, oh goodness, what am I going to do? And then things don't happen in isolation. But around the same time, of course, I was educating myself and I was listening to people like Regan Chastain and Aubrey Gordon. I was like, right, they're just calling it. They're saying, don't dance around it. Just use the word fat. So I started using it in my home to myself, not publicly, until I got comfortable with it. And then I thought, yep, I'm joining the fat train and I'm going to embrace this word. And I'm going to empower other people to embrace it as well, because only by doing that can we release the negative power that it has over us. So that's why it's taken years of practice. I've just kept doing it. And I do see that it can make other people feel uncomfortable. I've seen people have physical reactions when I say it, usually straight size people, but I'm like, yes, I love that. I love seeing them squirm in their seat because I know that I'm getting through and I'm making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love making them squirm too.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the reactions of your family, friends, like people closest to you as you got on the fat train and fat liberation and stopped trying to, especially the whole, and actually it's, you know, I think in my case, I'm curious if this is true for you too, the whole, when I stopped actively trying to change my body and stopped acting accordingly, you know, I stopped playing the good fatty, that was actually one of the breaking points with a number of people in my life. It was really hard for them. While I was kind of trying to conform, even though my body wasn't changing, it was like, as long as I was trying, you know, in quotes, trying, then it was okay. What was it like for you?
Yeah. Well, I think, well, I know. I actually, I had unknowingly stopped participating in diet culture a few years earlier. I'd stopped, you know, the trying. But this isn't working and it's just messing with my head. I'm unhappy. And this is all I'm thinking about. It's affecting everything I do. And I thought, I'm just going to try and not diet for a while and see what happens. You know, my weight stayed the same. And anyway, that's neither here nor there. And really, I guess at that point too, I just thought, I don't give a crap what anyone else thinks. I've got to do this for me. And I didn't that wasn't something that I announced. I just stopped doing it. And I thought, I'm just going to do what makes me feel good. So that was one thing, because I really needed to work, you know, stop doing, buying into that because of my mental health. When I put my hand up and shouted out to the world, this is a space I'm going to work in, and I'm going to work, create size inclusive environments, and I'm going to support fat people to live their best lives. No one in my family has come out to me publicly and said I'm doing the wrong thing or had anything negative to say. But what has happened is I've had so many messages privately from family members to say, I'm so proud of you. Particularly from aunties who are now in their 70s, I wish I had someone like you when I was younger to tell me not to waste so much time trying to be smaller, to embrace myself more as I am. I feel like I wasted so many years. Then I have cousins reaching out to me saying, I'm so glad you're doing this. My daughter's watching you and it's really helping her embrace her relationship with her body and to stay away from that pressure of being smaller. So I know my dad's really proud. He hasn't come out and told me himself, but he's old school, but I have heard from other people, you know, like, so yeah, I think from friends and family, the reception has been really welcome.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
It is so good. Yeah. Cause that is a big worry.
100%. Yeah. That it will change relationships. Oh, I'm so thrilled that that's the feedback that you're getting. And it must feel so good. Not only are you helping the people you've chosen to help, but there's this ripple effect that's happening just within people who you may not have expected to be helped by what you do.
Yeah. And friends will reach out and say, just seeing you do that has given me the courage to do what I want to do, like apply for that job that I'd been worried that I didn't have the look for and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it always takes me back to like those principles from Brené Brown around vulnerability and courage. I mean, it's whenever we fully choose to live authentically, go against the grain, because authenticity kind of requires that, because we break away from oppression naturally, it excites others. Others want freedom and liberation, and finding their versions of it and being empowered to do so, that's exciting. Oh, I'm so happy. That warms my heart.
Yeah, and also too, there's the other side too of, for a lot of straight-sized people who don't realize that weight stigma and fat phobia are a thing.
Yeah.
It's educated them too, and I've had people reach out and say, oh, I've changed the way how I do this and how I approach that, and, oh, I didn't understand why going to the doctor is so challenging for you, or, you know, and so sharing those experiences is educating and hopefully helping them to change their approach towards fat people too.
Yeah, that has been one of the most beautiful surprises for me of this podcast. Because I did not design this podcast for straight size, non-fat people. I did not think they would listen, but there are a lot who do. And then the messages they send me are like, it is. They're like, oh, I realize that I'm impacted by diet culture too. I have changed this. I have talked to my teacher, my children's teacher. I talk to my kids differently. And it's like, honestly, every time I get these emails, I sob because I'm like, oh my God, like this, it's needed, it's necessary. And I'm so honored that people who quote unquote, like, don't, well, not quote unquote, people who don't live in a marginalized body can find connections. I mean, because that's the whole point. If we're going to change our world, we need to have deep empathy for each other. And like when people are like, oh yeah, I now have empathy and I'm making some changes. It's like, oh, check mark, I'm done.
Absolutely. And because for me, I always say to people, we can't do this alone. This is not a conversation for fat people only. We need everyone in this conversation because you're right, diet culture does impact everyone. Everyone in a Western society or where there's advertising, we are all impacted by it, no matter your body size, from a very young age to when we die. And we can't do it alone. You're right. We need the empathy of everyone in all body shapes and sizes, from all groups. And this is a journey we can only take together.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, and this beautifully takes us to the work that you're doing as a size inclusion specialist, because you're working with people in organizations who have the power to change the organizations. Now, that is so exciting because we're talking like large scale change, which is what has to happen for all oppressions, you know? And so let's start with this idea of DEI, so diversity, equity, inclusion. And I've also started seeing it DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, which is interesting that belonging is showing up there. And how most of the time, and we've talked about this, and this has certainly been my experience as someone who has participated in a lot of DEI trainings, fatness, sizeism is, I would say 97% of the time, not even present. And then I'm always the fat person being like, hello, what about fat people? And I'm raising my hand. And it's like, come on. So talk to us about that. I get deeply furious. Why? Why is body size not on the radar?
Well, I think, number one, well, I know it's just because it's so ingrained in our culture and society that people don't even realize that weight bias and weight stigma exist. And if they do, it's just, well, that's just the way it is. Like, I think that's one. It is just so, so ingrained, and we don't even realize that there is something wrong with it and that somebody is being impacted by it. Number two, I think there is this, I've got to stop saying I think because I know these things. I know that there is the perception that you can control your body size. There's a perception that you're personally responsible for your body size. But there is a lot of research out there that shows that is not. And I wish I had the data in front of me now, and I know Aubrey Gordon goes into it in her book, What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat. So please check it out. But there are so many other elements that feed into body size, genetics being a large factor. That no human can be personally responsible for, but there still is this large perception that you can fix yourself through exercise and eating less. But we now know that that's not necessarily the case. And I really honestly know that they're the two main factors of why weight stigma isn't spoken about at work. And I also think to some degree, people don't know how to talk about it, how to address it, what language to use, and they're probably scared to address it.
Yeah, scared to get it wrong.
Yeah, exactly, because it is so emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and it's so interesting because I think a lot about this with respect and in comparison to making organization spaces safe for BIPOC. So people, Black, Indigenous, people of color, there's not an assumption that you can change your skin color, right?
Hello, Fat Joy friend. I'm popping into this episode to give you an exciting update. Fat Joy is now ranked in the top 2%. 2% of all 3.4 million global podcasts, which is a really big deal. You may have heard, because I've been talking about it, that I am aiming for this podcast to hit the top 1%. And you can help the podcast get there by making sure you've subscribed to the podcast and giving us a 5-star rating. And if you want to be a little extra, I love extra. If you've gotten something out of these episodes, if they've supported you in some way, please write a review for the podcast. I love these. I put them all on the website. They mean so much when they come in. No surprise, I believe that fat stories are worth telling, and I am so grateful to bring you a new story each week and honored that you keep coming back to listen. So thank you, lovely, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Exactly, right?
You know, there is, and like you said, you and I, and hopefully a number of listeners, deeply know that you really can't change your body size. And actually, I do know from having talked to a guest, the research is, it's something like, I'm going to get the number, it's either 221 or 223 factors that impact your body size. And food and exercise are a really small percent, like 20% kind of at most. And we know that intentional weight loss fails 95 to 98% of the time. So there's really no way to change your body size, and weight cycling often just causes weight regain and more. So like, we know all this. Everyone who's tried a diet in the world has mostly failed. And yet, because of, I think, this rhetoric that the diet culture industry has beautifully crafted and embedded deep in our souls, that we quote unquote should, I mean, I'm going to put should in quotes. I hate the word should. As a coach, you probably hate that word too. I always joke with my clients, like, you're shoulding all over yourself, you know, like, right? Don't say should. You know, that we should be able to somehow be the masters of our own fate and our own bodies. And it's just not true. And the connection with healthism, I think, is another big thing, especially in organizations, right? So even when DEI specialists go into workplaces to make the more inclusive, sizes being left out. So enter Andrea. What do you do? Why is it important? What is this costing business like? Talk about why you do what you do.
Yeah, I think, well, obviously, as we've just discussed, this is the missing link in the DEIB conversation. Because the other thing about body size, it affects people across all of the other marginalized groups. You can be a Black Indigenous person of color and be fat. You can be a Hindu person and be fat. You can be LGBTQIA and be fat. So it crosses all of the different intersections, and that's another conversation, because I really would love us to take a more intersectional approach to DEI. But I think what I know is that weight stigma is impacting people at work, because I've been impacted by it at work. I know it impacts people in that they don't feel that they can bring them their full selves to work. They feel pressured to be always trying to be the good fatty. They hold themselves from speaking up and putting forward their ideas. They stop themselves applying for jobs and moving forward and going for promotions. There is research that shows fat people are paid less, and in some cases, and that extrapolates, the bigger you are, the bigger the wage gap is. I think in the US, it's around $19,000 is the wage gap. So that in Australian dollars is $32,000. So that's a big gap when you start looking at those numbers. And this, for businesses, this means that they're missing out on the potential and the perspectives and the ideas and the transformation and the productivity that these people could bring to the workplace and make your workplace better. It's not all about bottom line, but we live in a capitalist society. So money is we need to discuss money. I believe unlocking all of these things will help businesses become more profitable. Even as simple as including fat people in your branding, because here we are, two examples of people who are looking for that. And we will spend our money with you if you are showing us that you want us in your, as part of your business, whether that's as an employee or a customer.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you know this, but I'm pretty curious if there are actual, and I know in the fashion world, there are some stats around this, like how much is it actually costing fashion brands who are not size inclusive? I wonder, has that been extrapolated beyond fashion into other industries?
Well, not that I know of. I've tried to look into it, but I haven't found any research around that yet.
Yeah. See, and even the fact that that doesn't exist is really interesting.
Yeah. And when you're talking, like I know in the US and in Australia, the number of people, and I hate these medicalized terms, but I'm going to use them because this is what they use in the survey data, like for the Australian Bureau of Statistics, overweight, considered overweight. It's 67% in Australia, and I think it's very similar in the US. I'm not sure what it is in Canada.
It's around the same. Yeah, between 65 and 68%. That's a huge majority. That's the majority.
I know. It's three quarters of the population almost. So you, excuse the pun here, but employers and businesses are missing a huge number of the population by just focusing on straight-sized people and not considering how you include fat people in your business and help them to feel that they belong.
Absolutely. And so Andrea, it's so interesting. When I first was thinking about doing a podcast, it was probably about a year and a half ago, I reached out to a couple of the fat chat groups that I belong to on Facebook. And I said, hey, because I also have a pretty strong corporate background and a leadership development background. And I thought, I'm going to be a leadership coach specifically for fat people, because I also held myself back and did not go for things, you know, like, so I really wanted to like start to bust through that. I'd kind of done it for myself, but also starting to do it for others as well. So that was going to be my coaching niche. So I put out this open call on these Facebook group for stories from people who had experienced anti-fat bias, fat phobia, weight stigma at work. And whoa, the stories that came in were shocking, from big companies like Apple and Royal Caribbean Cruises and like all these places, like big organizations and small ones too. And I'll just share one story. It's a simple thing, because where I'm going with this is I'm so curious if we can start to name, because I imagine there's a lot of leaders listening to this podcast, of ways that we can start to shift this in the workplace. But for example, one person wrote me, she's part of a vet office. And just so you know, everyone listening, these stories are shared with permission. I have permission to share these stories. And the vet was like getting lunch for everybody, and people like put in their orders, and it was like a sandwich place or something, a deli, and she like asked for like a sandwich, like I don't know, like a ham and cheese sandwich, like nothing too bananas. As the vet, and in my head it's a male, I don't know why, that's very gendered of me, and probably not, I don't know if it's true or not, but you know, some person, the vet, was handing out the lunches to everyone and handed her a salad.
Oh my goodness.
Had changed her order.
Oh my God. Oh no. Okay. Oh my God.
So that's one example of kind of a very, like, I don't even know what the word is for what that was. It's not subtle. I mean, it's very overt, but it was that kind of thing. And I just want to share one other example, because I feel like that's, this other example, unfortunately, Andrea, I have to say, a lot of people who wrote to me were harmed by HR. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. HR are the worst.
Yeah. I'm glad you said it. Okay, good.
No, absolutely. Yep.
One of the other egregious examples I got was this person works for, it was a big company, like one that people would know the name. And the head of HR sent out this article with like a memo saying, research to everybody, like hundreds and hundreds of people at this company.
Oh,
it's a big company.
My God.
Now, are you bracing? That people who eat with fat people will get fatter themselves.
Oh my God.
In the fucking workplace. And this person who wrote to me said, I could not believe it. I was devastated. I never went to the lunchroom again. I basically ate my bathroom at my desk, or ate my lunch in the bathroom or at my desk. And I just started looking for jobs elsewhere. Who does that? What? I mean, head of HR of a huge company did that. So there's a lot of thoughtlessness, a lot of people feeling like they have permission to do this kind of shit. So, all right, leaders, if you are listening, listen up. Andrea, what do they need to do differently?
Well, I've got a couple of tips for what people, because I think you need to take action as an individual before you can take action as a business. So I've kind of split it up into to actions you can take as an individual and actions you can take as a business. First of all, as an individual, please start exploring your own weight bias. And I want you to know when you're doing this and you're starting to become aware of the judgments and the assumptions, the comments, the behaviors, the communications you've made about someone on their body size, just be kind to yourself and forgive yourself up until now, because it's okay. We've all been there. We've all made mistakes in this area. And you are a product of society. So you are a product of the messages you've received. And that's okay. But now that you know that this is not okay, this is your call to action to do something about it.
Yeah. What is one step they can do to start to examine their own bias?
It's just become conscious of it. So if they see a fat person, just start to check, well, what are the assumptions I'm making about that person? And where is the evidence that that is true? How do I know that?
Right. Like I hear this a lot around, and again, heard a lot of stories from people I've worked with who, like, let's say they're hiring managers, for example. People are hiring, and if they see they have an interview in person, they may have been the forefront candidate, but then all the assumptions about, oh, well, fat people don't work as hard, or lazy, or slobby. Like, that's what we're saying. Like, check your assumptions. If you're assuming anything about someone in a fat body and their work ethic and productivity and ability to contribute to the bottom line and the goals of the team and the KPIs and all that good stuff, that's what we're saying. That is internalized anti-fat bias right there.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for giving the examples of what that is. So yeah, if you see a fat person in the checkout line at the grocery store and you start judging their food choices, yeah, what's in their cart? That's anti-fat bias.
Yes.
Yeah. So please just wait. That is really the first step. You don't even really need to start to change it at that point. That will actually, I find it starts to happen quite organically once you build that awareness of it. When you start saying things like to yourself, oh, I shouldn't eat that, or to your child or to someone else, you know, it's those sort of things. So, but please, the biggest thing you can do is not be hard on yourself. Just show yourself some compassion and know that we've been there too, and we're all a product of this, of society, but it is just about starting to build that awareness. I think the next thing you can do is start to call in a conversation. And I suggest to people, I know these things can be really hard to do at work because this is where your income comes from, your opportunity for promotion and things like that. So I always suggest start practicing outside of work before you bring it into the workplace, so that you've got a level of comfort and confidence before you're doing it in a place where it might feel a bit riskier for you. So this could be to start to have change or start a conversation. So if you hear someone commenting on what someone else is eating, you could say something like, that seems like a really personal comment. Or you could say, oh, I think we've gone off topic. Let's get back to talking about, you know, what was the football score on the weekend or whatever topic you were first talking about it. And I also encourage people who come along to my workshops is you could even say, look, I've just been to this great workshop where we spoke about weight bias. Have you heard about it before? And that's a real opportunity to start a conversation and a bit of an education around weight bias and how it impacts other people.
I love that. And I think, you know, what's so interesting about what you're saying, Andrea, is like these tips, like this is intended for people who are not fat. Like we need that allyship. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But fat people can use them too. They're open for everyone. Yeah. But absolutely. I would love to see more people who are not fat starting these conversations because that's where the real power is. Yeah. And then I think, really, well, I know, build your understanding of all sides of this growing conversation. There are so many books out there on this topic now. There's fabulous podcasts like this one. There's my podcast. There are so many people talking about this topic. I really struggle to listen to them all. So find the one that really resonates with you. There are a lot of articles and research on this topic as well. Once you start scratching back, there are so many resources to help you start growing your knowledge in this area, or follow size inclusive and fat activists on social media. Yeah. So that's my tips for individuals.
Yeah, that's great. That's really helpful. And I feel like I love how you're suggesting all these in a very, very lovely, palatable way. And I'm just going to come in as like bad cop and be like, why do we even have that analogy anymore? That actually does not track anymore. I'm just realizing I don't want to be that kind of bad cop. I'm going to come in as like the other emotion and be like, people, this is your responsibility. I don't want excuses. Like everyone should just be fucking doing this because you are hurting people like me and Andrea every time you don't. So I'm just going to come with the other energy.
I love that, Sophia. And even more, you are hurting people you love. With 67% of the population in this group, you are going to have fat people in your family, in your friendship circles, in your workplace. So you are, you know, it's not even about us as individuals, it's about the people you love.
Yeah, stop hurting them. Okay.
Yeah, stop hurting them. Yeah. So just to ram that home. So for businesses, the first step I really recommend is take a size inclusion audit because this will really help you understand the breadth of the issue in your workplace and it'll also help you identify your starting point.
Yeah. And what does that look like?
Well, I actually offer that service and what it is, I work with organizations and I really start with, this is the next step, but the first place I start is understanding what they perceive their problem to be. I work with, then look at their people related strategies and policies. And then I want to talk to their people. I look at their workplace as well because, you know, that their physical space is important too. I look at things like uniforms. I look at things like wellness programs, like anything, you know, what do they do? How do they team build? Like, let's really get into the detail of what's going on in this workplace, the lunchroom, what's the culture around eating together or not eating together? Do you have company-wide 10,000 step programs or fitness challenges and things like that? Like, yeah, we really get into that, to that detail. Yeah. So, and really I love to hear from your employees and get their perception of it as well. Then the next thing I think, employees can do is review their DEI strategy and people related policies to, like their anti-bullying and their bullying anti-harassment policies to make sure that body size is included in there so that your employees who do experience bullying or comments about their body size know that they have a channel to pursue and follow this up and take action. Yeah, I think that's really important. You've got to back up your action. Well, actually, got to get this hardwired into your policies and procedures and strategies.
And then make it okay. What I'm hearing there too is making it okay that, hey, we're just like all DEI work. Hey, this is a learning curve for all of us. We're not going to be perfect. Plus, perfection is a white supremacist concept. So like, let's get rid of that. It's rubbish. Let's just be in the learning and the dynamic nature of this together. And if mistakes are made, we can repair and we can move forward and do better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fat people are pretty forgiving.
Well, we've had to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we'd rather see you try something than just push this topic under the carpet and keep ignoring us.
Yeah. When people try, it's just everything. I love those tips, Andrew. That's really helpful. And I love that this is something that you offer, that you can go into places and do a size inclusion audit and really help organizations like get on the right track with this. I have a facetious question that you don't have to answer, which is, why is HR the worst when it comes to this? Like when I was sharing, because I've heard this from so many people, like, why? HR is...
Because I say that, and that is my opinion. So to other HR practitioners, please know that is my opinion only. And I guess because that has been my experience as a member of a HR team, I have seen it play out over and over again from HR people. And, you know, I've been in so many environments, been in that environment around those conversations daily, that's why I feel like it is the worst. Yeah. Yeah. So it may not be, but I think there is generally HR has a higher percentage of women and in that team. Naturally, that sort of work attracts women. So women are really conditioned to constantly be trying to lose weight and, you know, bounce back after birth of babies and things like that. So that's probably been my experience. Also then too, because of my HR networks, the people who are sharing their fatphobic experiences with me are within HR. So, you know, it probably is my perception. Yeah. But I think too, HR is also the space where we can generate the greatest amount of change.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and I know it's normally like kind of HR or culture departments where they're bringing in DEIB consultants, right? And so that does feel like a great place where this can start to germinate within a company and then just ripple out. Yeah. Yeah. My heart is so filled with a wish that at least several people listening start to make some changes at their organizations, because the harm that is done in the workplace and what I find and what I've experienced is the workplace is a very particular type of harm because of the fear of the employees at losing their jobs. So the power imbalance is great. And like, I can't, like, there are family members and friends who I can just not talk to, but I can't just not work, you know? And so that's what we really need, people in positions of power to bring attention to this within themselves and within their organizations, because a lot of times employees are too scared of rocking the boat and losing their job or being fired or laid off or whatever, as you know, and yeah, it's such a power imbalance.
Yeah. Yeah. And because too, there's no process in place or nobody's talking about it. So you feel like employees feel like they've got no recourse or no path to pursue and tell people that this is wrong.
Right.
But it's what I've seen, it's really impacting people's mental health.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And their ability to perform to their full potential at work. And imagine if you had a workplace full of people who feel like for the majority of the time they can be operating at their full potential. That would be amazing. But instead, you've got this group of people who feel like I need to stay under the radar and keep myself small, because if I pop up, someone's going to comment on my weight.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're so on the money there about that power imbalance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to add a layer to it, body size is not a protected right legally around employment law yet. I mean, there's a few, like New York City just won a big, you know, but I don't know if Australia is different. Is Australia different?
In a couple of states, it is protected through the Human Rights Commission, but generally it's not. In Queensland, where I live, it's not protected through the Human Rights Commission, but if it is protected through the anti-discrimination legislation, if the weight can be attributed to a disability.
Oh, they link it with disability. I hate that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's the other power imbalance too, is that, you know, if you get fired, you know, for XYZ reason, for a lot of people, you can go and you can, like, you know, go against the company and hire lawyers and, like, claim wrongful dismissal, but there's no protected category for size. Yeah. So it is complex, and we can do better. This is not hard stuff. I've worked at organizations where I've been part of shifting the culture, and it wasn't hard. It was a couple conversations. We bought some better chairs, and, you know, we did some training, and like that, it was wonderful. And I feel I am now so loyal to this company. They will never get rid of me because I feel so valued and seen. And yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you're right. It doesn't have to be hard. But I just want to go back to that, our comments about it being not being a protected class, because just because something's not against the law doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. And I think in so many other areas, businesses are leading the way in social change. Governments are so far behind, and legislation is so far behind. If we look at climate and we look at what companies are doing around inclusion in the other areas, like with Black, Indigenous, people of colour, and the other areas, some organisations are really leading the way. So there's no excuse they can't be leading the way in the size space as well.
Oh, I love that as a call to action, Ada. So good. Yay. So Andrea, we're coming to the end, but before we close, I want to talk to you about joy, because we've raged nicely and now it's called Fat Joy. So we should have some joy. I know you're about to go on a lovely little trip. Is that something that brings you a lot of joy?
Yeah, it's just happened that, well, my husband's got the day off, so I cleared my calendar and we're going on a hike today. So we found a little waterfall that we're going to go and explore. So for me, lately I've been really disconnected from my sense of joy. So for me, I'm really now taking proactive steps to make sure I do the things that bring me joy, and anything in nature. So whether it's a hike or going to the beach for a swim, or even just laying out in the backyard watching the clouds go by, that's what brings me joy.
Oh, I love that. Yes. Well, may your hike be truly joyful. And I'm so grateful to talk to you and spread this message and inspire organizations and people leaders to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's not that hard, and we're here to help, and it's fun, and we're fun to work with, and it's engaging, and it's such important work. So please don't be shy.
Agree. Oh, thank you, Andrea, for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sophia. I've been looking forward to this conversation for months. So thank you.
Yay, me too. Before we go, I'd like to read a poem, because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about: expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem. For this episode with Andrea, I'm going to read a poem called From Blossoms by Lee Young Lee. The brightness, joy, wonder of this poem remind me of Andrea's energy and enthusiasm for making the world a safer place for all our bodies. Such good work. All right, here it is, From Blossoms. From blossoms comes this brown paper bag of peaches we bought from the boy at the bend in the road where we turned towards signs painted peaches. From laden boughs, from hands, from sweet fellowship in the bins, comes nectar at the roadside. Succulent peaches we devour, dusty skin and all, comes the familiar dust of summer, dust we eat. Oh, to take what we love inside, to carry within us an orchard, to eat not only the skin, but the shade, not only the sugar, but the days, to hold the fruit in our hands, adore it, then bite into the round jubilance of peach. There are days we live as if death were nowhere in the background, from joy to joy to joy, from wing to wing, from blossom to blossom, to impossible blossom, to sweet impossible blossom.
Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly Fat Joy day, and we'll talk again soon.